Welcome to the 23rd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist. I live in Southwest Florida. I'm also an endurance athlete. I like to do marathons, Ironmans, other distance triathlons, and try to set a good example for my patients. I've been plant-based several years. We teach wellness classes in the office. I try to educate each and every patient on the benefits and merits of a plant-based diet, and find it one of the most rewarding aspects of my practice. Today we have Karen Hartglass on the show, and she has her own podcast as well as a radio show, and it's called Responsible Eating and Living. And I think you'll enjoy hearing her story. She's been plant-based over 20 years. She and her partner, Gary DiMatteo, have a nonprofit benefiting animal awareness and plant-based nutrition education. She is an ovarian cancer survivor and attributes that to being plant-based. But before we get on to the interview, I just thought I'd talk to you a little bit about what's happened over the last week. I traveled from Florida to Knoxville to West Virginia. My daughter's on the rowing team at West Virginia, and they were supposed to compete in Knoxville, Tennessee, and for various reasons, their team got pulled, injuries, illness, overtraining. My mother and I had tickets to fly into Knoxville that we couldn't exchange, so we decided just to fly to Knoxville and drive to West Virginia. And we're both plant-based, and I got to say that it was not, we were plant-based the whole time, but certainly didn't eat the amount of vegetables, especially raw vegetables, that we usually eat. And I found myself by Sunday evening just craving a large salad and, you know, fresh raw vegetables. We had some bagels, we had some oatmeal, we had some whole grain buckwheat cakes for breakfast, we had some tofu wraps and some salads, and we actually even got takeout from Outback with a baked potato and vegetables and a salad. You know, had to put the cheese off the salad. It was even disappointing. In West Virginia, there's a restaurant that you can get this great wraps with tofu and rice and broccoli and mushrooms. And then they brought out guacamole that was made with at least half sour cream. So, you know, I understand that, you know, avocados are probably harder to get in West Virginia, more expensive, and to cut costs, they, you know, use sour cream. But, you know, they had such a healthy thing going, and they kind of ruined it with the sour cream. Same way with their cabbage and their coleslaw, again, mayo-based. You know, it could be so much more healthy. And, again, I'm not so sure if it's cost containment versus education. You know, certainly it's better than it was, but still not as good as it could be. So, you know, we managed to stay plant-based, but it certainly wasn't the low oil and raw that, you know, we're typically used to. And as soon as my feet hit the house, you know, I made a great big salad with every vegetable I had left in the house, and just kind of have been craving a lot of fresh green salads since I got back. The other thing that, you know, I've experienced here lately, I had a discussion with a primary care in a local hospital. We were talking about various things, but the quote came up from him, when I have my heart attack, and I asked him, it's like, well, why would you want a heart attack? And he's an overweight physician, and it's like, why wouldn't you just take care of yourself and eat a plant-based diet? And he said, well, my wife's a vegetarian. And it's like, well, why aren't you plant-based? Why aren't you setting a good example for your patients? And he really looked at me, and I don't actually think he'd ever thought about it. You know, maybe he would, but, you know, he was so much more interested in protocols and, you know, hospital-based medicine that he, you know, he had failed to take care of himself, and he failed to look at the simple ways that we could help our patients in the hospitals be more, you know, get better quicker if they just were provided, you know, better nutrition. So that was one, you know, thing when I came back into town that was kind of hit with. But I really think we need to take time as healthcare providers to talk to our patients and to educate them. And, you know, certainly out there, if you have a physician that doesn't take time to go into why they are doing things or support you on your plant-based journey, you know, I think, you know, maybe try to educate them and, you know, give them some literature and help them out or refer them to my podcast or some of the plant-based podcasts out there so that they can, you know, help their patients better and more economically by teaching and educating on being plant-based. The other thing that I ran into that I felt was interesting this week is we went to our local Jimmy's Taco restaurant with Charlotte County Plant-Based Foodies, and you know, we were eating our, they make a good veggie burrito there, hold the cheese, hold the sour cream. And, you know, one of the members' husband always comes with her and supports her, but he doesn't wholeheartedly support her as far as he doesn't think of that as being something for himself or a way to his health. And he's a very, very intelligent, successful man, but yet he doesn't see his own ill health right in front of him. And, you know, kind of jokes about, you know, different things about being plant-based, but... You know, again, I guess it's just that he doesn't quite want to admit that that's the real way he should eat, and he's hanging on to his old ways. But, you know, hopefully he'll keep coming to the foodies group and listening to her and feeling better, and maybe he will eventually see that this is the way, you know, he should eat as well. So that was kind of my experience, that. And then I had another patient and his wife come into the office, and she's trying to be plant-based, but there's absolutely no support in the house, and he actually does the cooking. And he doesn't want to be a part of being plant-based, even though he has a lot of the same medical problems, and in some respects is in worse health than she is. And he tries to control his portion size by, you know, skipping breakfast and lunch a lot, and then, you know, obviously once he starts to eat in the evening, he eats, you know, the wrong foods, and he's hungry, and so he eats all evening, and so he continues to gain weight instead of lose weight. And he, you know, at best holds on, but is certainly making no progress. Yet he can't seem, and I know he doesn't feel well, and I know he doesn't want to be that weight, but he can't seem to see the forest for the trees, and she's not quite strong enough to make the commitment herself. Their whole family's overweight, their family's overweight, people are sick, and yet they can't quite make the transition. So hopefully, you know, again, as we continue to educate them, somebody will have enough courage to make the commitment in that family and show the other members of the family just how beneficial eating plant-based could be. So anyway, without further ado, I think we'll get to Karen Hartglass. You should check out her website at responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's all responsible eating, no hyphens or anything. And she has a great documentary there as well. She was invited to a feedlot owner in Yerington, Nevada, to give the vegan perspective on animal agriculture's contribution to climate change. And there were about 250 cattle ranchers there, and she was kind of the lone vegan source. She also got to sing the national anthem. But she convinced a lot of people there that had never thought about, you know, animal and the impact on climate change. And I think she reached a lot of people in a very positive way. And she was actually very well accepted. And it's worth watching the documentary. The other thing on her website, she has her radio show. And has some great guests from gardeners, vegans, animal rights people. So there's a real good variety of people to see. Some of that you don't see on the traditional podcast. And they also have a great recipe page. So check out her website. It's very, very good. They're good people and easy to listen to. And the website is wonderful. So without further ado, here is... Karen Hartglass.
Hi, welcome Karen Hartglass. It's nice to have you on the show. Karen is a 20-year strong plant-based advocate, animal activist. She was the director of Earth Save International. She has a great podcast and a great website. She does interviews. It's all about food. Her partner, Gary DeMatteo, they have some wonderful recipes, so you all need to check it out. But I'm looking forward to speaking with you tonight, so welcome.
Thank you. This is my favorite subject. I love talking about food, healthy, nutritious food. I just wanted to add, when I left EarthSave, I founded my own nonprofit. It's called Responsible Eating and Living. I founded it with my partner, Gary DeMatte. I love the name because the acronym is REAL, R-E-A-L, and that's what it's all about, eating real food, whole plant foods. And we try and make it fun and delicious. And lots of information at the responsibleeatingandliving.com.
Yes, I've been on that site quite a bit, and I've enjoyed your interviews, and I'm actually having one of Gary's recipes tonight. So it's
which one?
I'm going to do the polenta with basil and roasted garlic.
Oh, thank you. That was my recipe, actually.
Oh, that was yours. I'm so sorry.
We do a lot of them together, actually. Sometimes he cooks, sometimes I cook, sometimes we cook together. Sometimes I start something, and he says, why don't you do this to it? He actually got me onto polenta because he's from an Italian heritage, and I tend to like it like the firmer version of polenta where you let it firm up and then you can grill it, and he tends to like it the creamier, softer version, but they're both good.
Yeah, it's funny. My mom's Italian, but my dad was Irish, and my grandmother, I spent a lot of time with her growing up in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and she used to make the version up there called mush. And basically, so she would cook it, let it sit up, and then she would slice it and fry it. And we would put jelly on it, you know, and you ate it with, like, it was more of a breakfast food. Sometimes she would have it at dinner, but the never crossed until... Well, probably again, rediscovered it when we went plant-based and started doing it with some vegetarian chili or vegan chili over it. And then, so good. And then the base for it's good for a pizza, the base. So that's another good way we like it. So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about your journey. I mean, I saw the above things, but, you know, you had a health crisis. So were you vegan before the health crisis or that?
This is kind of the fascinating part of the story, but ultimately really affirmed my belief in what I was doing. So I became vegetarian when I was a teenager. I was about 15 years old, and I didn't want to kill animals. And it wasn't until I was 30 years old and got a little more educated about food. We didn't have the internet back then, so it wasn't as easy to find things out. I gave up dairy and eggs when I was about 30. Now, all during this period, I never really acknowledged that I had a physical problem. It was the only body I ever knew, so whatever I was going through was normal to me. But I did have difficulty when I was a teenager with female issues. When I was menstruating, I had very, very heavy periods. And I think that's where my problem started. I had a problem maybe since birth, I don't know, but definitely since I was a teenager. And to manage that, I used extra soup or tampons, sometimes three at a time, because my flow was so heavy. And that aggravated a problem where I believe I got an intense dose of dioxin in my young body. So I didn't know that. This is all my thinking after the fact, but fast forward, I become vegan at 30. I'm really into health and nutrition. I learn a lot from all kinds of leaders in the health movement working for Earth Save. And at 48 years old, I'm diagnosed with advanced ovarian cancer, and I didn't even know it going into the hospital. I thought I had accelerating fibroid going into menopause kind of growth. I was reading about it on the internet. The symptoms seemed to dry, and I didn't go to any kind of great specialist. I went to some local doctor in my network, and I was fighting having a hysterectomy. I didn't want to have one, but ultimately I was so miserable. I went in for one, and I woke up to discover I had advanced ovarian cancer. Now, what I believe today is I have a theory, and, you know, people may say it's ridiculous, whatever, but it's mine, and I believe it. I believe my diet kept me alive all that time. I think if I hadn't been eating the way I was eating, I would have been dead a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I went through three major surgeries, primarily because the first doctor I went to wasn't as good as he could have been, and made some mistakes. I also went through some aggressive chemotherapy, and I know I got through all of that because I was eating a very nutritionally excellent, nutritionally dense diet. So while the chemo was trying to kill me, I had all kinds of nutrients that were keeping me strong.
Did any of your cancer, I guess, you know, they must have known that you were plant-based. I mean, were they insisting that you have some animal protein or anything like that along the way? That was there any discussion?
Yeah, well, I want to say that I was lucky. Lucky is an interesting perspective when you're dealing with cancer. But I was connected to some great experts, and John Robbins was one of them. And he guided me to a number of places, which ultimately led me to have chemotherapy at a place called the Block Center outside of Chicago. And they promoted a plant-strong diet. They weren't promoting a vegan diet, but they were really into plants. They were into nutraceuticals. They had an alternative integrated cancer program. And so they didn't bat an eye when I said I was vegan, and they supported that, and they were thrilled. And that they have a kitchen in their treatment center, and I felt so at home there. They had raw food bars and soy milk and tocino, coffee substitute. It was like my own kitchen.
Wow.
I felt... And I say that this place was the Club Med of chemotherapy. I have only good memories of going to this place.
Any contact lately? I mean, is it still going strong?
This particular place?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I've been meaning to follow up. The founder, Dr. Keith Block, he put out a book a few years ago, so I think they're still going.
You know, because it seems, you know, I took the wellness class with Pam Popper. You know, mm-hmm. Of course, the China study, I've interviewed Dr. Campbell, and I heard you interview Dr. Cynthia Thompson. And, you know, I've heard Dr. McDougall. I interviewed Ruth Heydrich with her breast cancer, on and on and on. And, you know, everybody's very brave when it comes to cardiovascular disease. You know, of course, this is the way to go. Mm-hmm. And everybody's probably pretty much, you know, eating a plant-based diet is probably, you know, definitely going to decrease your risk of cancer. But after that, people start to get a little squeamish, you know, as far as, of course, we know, I heard your interview with, you know, Dr. Thompson, and, you know, to be able to do the study and, you know, do you recommend somebody eat hamburgers versus somebody eats, you know, kale? You know, do you withhold chemotherapy? You know, I mean, so it's a very difficult walk to walk these days.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But you got to wonder if they were so progressive, you know, that many years ago, you know, that they you would think they'd have some data.
Oh, right. I don't know if they do. It's hard because, as you know, with studies, there's always the need to have a control group.
Right.
And how do you do that when... And I'm sure it's difficult for the Block Center just financially to do all the things that they do. They give you a lot of care. It's not an assembly line, unfortunately, the way a lot of hospitals deal with chemotherapy today. It's hard. And, you know, I don't know. They have not contacted me, and it surprises me because I want them to know I'm still here.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you're a great success story. And I just wonder, you know, I mean, even if they do the traditional chemotherapy, but if they're advocating a plant-based diet, you know, certainly their numbers with ovarian cancer, maybe even pancreatic mm-hmm. cancer might be better than the general numbers, you know, that are out there with similar chemotherapeutic agents where they tell you to eat candy and, you know, and high protein diets.
Right. I don't know that answer, but I agree with you. I'm a big believer in the numbers. And I know that I've read that they've made claims that they have a lower remission rate, but I haven't seen the real numbers.
Mm-hmm. So has your diet evolved since then? I mean,
of course. Yeah. So I have a daily green juice, and I'm sipping on one right now as we speak. This is my medicine. I have been juicing ever since my diagnosis, and that's every day. And in addition, my diet has gotten greener. I've been a vegan for a very long time, 26 years, and vegetarian longer, but it's greener than before. And my palate has changed because when I was going through the cancer, my diet was cleaner than it is today. Not that it's dirty at all today, but I wouldn't touch sugar. I didn't eat sweet, sugary fruits. I was limiting my fruits mostly to berries, maybe an occasional banana in a smoothie. But I was really watching my sugar intake because I knew that cancer ate sugar and I didn't want to feed it. Mm-hmm. And my palate changed to adjust to more bitter flavors because I was eating more greens and learning to like them raw and steamed and cooked and juiced and blended and powdered any way that I could get them in.
And that's very good. And so these days, you know, you started out as a chemical engineer, right? And then...
I did. You know, when I was in high school trying to figure out what I should be, the feminist part of me thought I should do something with math and science and something that where there weren't many women. And I wonder today why I didn't become a doctor. But I was drawn to engineering, and I did that for about 20 years. And then I literally just fell into the nonprofit world. It was not a planned path move. I was volunteering for EarthSave, and one thing led to another, and all of a sudden I was running the show.
And so responsible eating and living real, so it promotes a vegan lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And you're an educator, basically.
Yeah. So we're primarily media based, so we have a website, and most of our activity is on the site where, as you know, we have the weekly podcast that's at Progressive Radio Network. Every show is archived on the site, and most of them are transcribed. I've got a wonderful crew of volunteers who transcribe them. And the lovely thing about that particular project is, at first I thought, oh, transcribing is such a tedious project, and how could I possibly get these things done? And so many of my volunteers enjoy this process. They're learning so much. And so everybody's winning from this, and I get so excited when I hear from some of them about how they liked a particular podcast or something they learned.
Yeah, it's getting educated without knowing it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Well, some of them have to have community service hours either for school or for some punitive reason, and some of them are just have free time on their hands. It's a beautiful thing. Another thing we just started is a webisode. We've done two, and we've got a third in the works, where it's a three-part series. I do a newscast, Gary does a food show, and then we go out into the community to a local business who's doing something that we like and feature them. And that's been a lot of fun. And I just started a new blog called What Vegans Eat, and it's been a great exercise for me, and the feedback has been terrific. And I just blog every day about what we eat during the day. It's very simple.
Yeah, that, you know, I mean, that I think that's the whole thing. You can, I've talked to a lot of physicians. You know, once we spoke a little bit before we started, you know, forks over knives, I knew that I wanted to incorporate this into my practice. And, you know, Caldwell Esselstyn is, you know, I just wholeheartedly like, you know, this is how I want to do it. It would be great to, you know, I get so much joy in taking people off their medications and turning things around. It's truly the first time that you can win as a cardiologist, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm all raring to go. But when people come to my office, you know, typically they're not coming to expecting that. And So, you know, and it's been a very, there's a learning curve, you know, and to approach, everybody needs to be approached a little different. You know, I can't help but even, I can't help myself. I approach everybody. Even sometimes my nurse will come out and say, don't even try it this time. It's, you know, you're not, it's, you're, you'll be wasting your breath on this one. And I'll go in and I can't help myself because I feel that it's such a valuable secret that's not been told too much. And
good for you. I don't go to the doctor often, but I remember going to a cardiologist a few years ago and I was just nauseous from what he was talking about. And then I said, well, what about food? And it's like, yeah, I know, but nobody wants to hear it.
Yeah,
you have to talk about it.
I don't think, you know, I mean, nobody wants to, you know, I can remember my father was overweight. And I remember he used to go for a physical and they used to say, you're overweight, lose weight. And his response would be to change doctors. And so then, actually, I was like first-year medical student, and he went for his physical, and he came back, and they said he had diabetes. Well, it was no shock. Diabetes was every place in the family. But anyway, he has diabetes, so he's, you know, here he is 40, 50 pounds overweight, and he's got diabetes. And he told my mother, he said, well, if he'll just put sweet and low in the iced tea, then I could lose weight. Meanwhile, I had like this giant bowl of ice cream every night and a couple beers before dinner. That had nothing to do with it. But, you know, of course, and then the traditional Irish Italian cooking that we did, you know, but it was pretty funny that, you know, people just don't want to hear that they've done, first of all, that they've done something that may have caused their ill health. And that if they look like their neighbor, you know, then why should I be the one that have to change? And in Florida is more like, well, nobody will want to go out with us. They won't invite us to their house for potlucks and all this other kind of stuff, you know. And so it becomes a little bit difficult. And then, you know, so I'm all excited and, you know, I got to kind of slip this in. So I've learned to talk even faster than I talk to try to get it started. And but the other part of it is, you know, you don't want to, you know, irritate people too bad. But I also get frustrated that, if, you know, I listen to these podcasts and people say, well, you know, the doctors never tell you anything. And it's true. They don't ever tell you anything. But, you know, on the other hand, it's not that easy because people don't come seeking out nutritional advice for the most part. I'm starting to get a few now since the podcast and since, you know, words got out, I'm the crazy plant-based cardiologist in town. But, you know, so most of the time you've got to kind of slip it in. But for example, today I had a guy that came in, he had bladder cancer, and after his bladder cancer surgery, he had a heart attack. So here the guy is a double whammy. And nobody in the last year has spoken to this guy about what he eats. And, you know, so it's a great opportunity. But it also is, it's a big learning curve on how to present it.
Well, people do think that their doctors know best about nutrition, even though most of them don't. So,
I guess there's also such a mixed message, you know, because people know, you know, I mean, I know people in our town, they'll throw, you know, easy ways to lose weight, you know, go on Weight Watchers, go do South Beach, you know, something that people, you know, here's a diet pill, is, you know, something that's easy, or, you know, the Atkins diet, you know, I mean, I've argued with actually cancer surgeons in the hospital who are sitting there at the doctor's lounge having bacon and eggs on the Atkins diet.
Oh, please. Mm-hmm.
And they're losing weight. And it's like, well, yeah, you can lose weight on that diet. You can lose weight with chemotherapy, but do you really want to lose weight that way? And, you know, but so I think there's such, we, you know, as a group, we convey such a mixed message sometimes that it's also very confusing.
Here's a story you're going to love. Maybe you heard it on one of my podcasts, but my first oncologist surgeon who did my first surgery and told me I had cancer. Yeah, I had my oncologist surgeon who operated on me when I had my first cancer surgery. And the subsequent days while I was recovering in the hospital, he kept asking me about my diet. He said, you were so clean inside. What are you doing? And I would lecture to my surgeon from my hospital bed about diet and nutrition. And he actually became a member of EarthSave.
Very cool.
I he saw me inside. So here it is. I had this watermelon-sized tumor. But everything else was lovely and pink and perfect.
Crazy.
And, you know, that's a testament to plant foods.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, I mean, there's certainly no side effects, you know, as far as the plant-based treatment goes, you know.
Oh, please.
Compared to...
You were talking about the doctors and eating all the wrong things. So, you know, when you're in the hospital and you have cancer, they're feeding you the foods that feed cancer. No matter how hard I tried to get food that met my requirements, there was always sugar on the tray. The woman across from me, they were feeding her some kind of pork dish. It's just so sad.
Yeah, we don't think about it. I met with our local hospital to try to get plant-based options on the menu. And the first time, they didn't have a bean in the hospital of any kind. It's like, it's so simple. You know, I mean, this is like, you know, this is not only simple, it's cheap. It's potentially cheap. You know, a can of beans, you know, would go a long way here. It's been very difficult. Even now, you know, I'm well over a year fighting with them to some degree, and you know, people, I'll grab a menu, or they take the menus from the patients on iPads now. You know, they're high tech, and so if I happen to be there, I'll order for them. It's like, what do you have? And, you know, so the best option would be a spaghetti with marinara sauce, you know, with, you know, hardly any, no vegetables. And you can get, you know, a few lettuce leaves, or maybe a vegetarian Amy's pizza. That, you know, those are the, and they've even sent people to like buy a frozen dinner, you know, when people are really complaining that they want a plant-based dinner, you know, at the local health food store. But It's been very, very difficult. And at the other hospital, I gave a talk on plant-based nutrition, and I didn't know they were serving food. And so I'm waiting to start my talk, and the kitchen people are, you know, they're coming in, they're setting up. It's like, oh, you're having food. They're bringing in chicken and blue cheese for my plant-based nutrition talk. I said, what are you doing? What are you doing? She said, well, we're having a heart healthy snacks here. And it's like, where?
Wow. Well, that's probably a learning experience for the next time you talk at an event like that.
Yeah, I said, you know, please let me help you, you know, plan.
Right.
I'll bring the beans.
That's the best way, I think, to get the message across, is to put the good foods in people's mouth.
Yeah, I think so. I spoke with Chef AJ the other day, and you know, she gave me a good idea about carting the old Instapot into the office. So that, I think that's a something I'm going to try in the future. How about your family? Are they plant based?
Right. So my parents, who are still alive, my mom's 81 and my dad just turned 87. They are not vegetarian or vegan, but they eat a lot better, thanks to my influence. My mom has tried numerous times, and she's cut way back, but she just finds it really hard. And I think it was your father or your parents mentioned, it's hard socializing. And, you know, you don't want to lose your friends.
Yeah.
Not really your friends. They won't go along with you because you're eating better, but... it's hard, and they're around a lot of people that eat this way. Although they're close with another couple who used to come to a lot of my events, and the husband finally read the China study, and he was hooked. And he's vegetarian, eats some eggs, but he looks phenomenal. He's lost a lot of weight. The color's back in his skin. It's beautiful. So there's that. And then my older sister and my younger brother are both vegan.
Mm-hmm. Good. So,
which makes it nice for holidays, because we're strong in number.
Yeah, it makes it better. I when I finally, you know, said okay, the household's vegan. You know, we usually have a pretty big Christmas Eve party, and it's like, so my mom and I prepare all the food, and I said, okay, we're going all plant based this year, and it's like, what?
Oops.
And it's like, yeah, we're all plant based. She says, well, they might show up this year, but they'll never come back.
No,
we've done it. This is our third year, and everybody likes it and has a good time, you know. And you know, it's never been an issue. So I really do think, again, when you make good dishes and people, you know, when they taste it, they're fine. You know, it's more of the concept, you know, that people are worried about, you know. But we always used to have a big bowl of shrimp, you know, and a big turkey. And my mom's like, what about the shrimp? You know, and it's like, nope, it's gone.
I talk about this all the time, all about food. That's my passion. And one of the things that I really believe in is the marketing of food affects so many people's food choices, unfortunately. And I just saw a positive post that I didn't read it thoroughly, but something about Michelle Obama and a marketing firm that is going to start marketing fruits and vegetables. Now, we need a huge campaign like that to make it fun and sexy and the trend.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I visited California. I actually went out to True North and visited. And, of course, we were doing some, ran a marathon out there and we're doing some touring. But, you know, we got to go to Cafe Gratitude and, you know, some of these vegan restaurants, you know, they're all vegan. And it was like, it's such a treat to, you know, to have choices, you know, usually can find something on every menu, but to have choices, like, you know, you have to decide actually.
It's hard.
I'll have that one, you know. What kind of businesses are you visiting for these programs?
Yeah, so we just started, and we figured we'd start in our own neighborhood, which is in Queens, New York. And we're excited because Queens, one of the five New York City boroughs, the largest, was just selected by Lonely Planet as the number one tourist destination for 2015. Now, many people may be surprised by that, and we're kind of surprised by that, but we're using it. So Queens is like this happening place, apparently, and we figured we'd look around to some of the businesses. And there's a new coffee shop that just opened up in my neighborhood of Forest Hills, and the only options we had if you wanted to go for tea and coffee are Starbucks. And now I'm glad Starbucks has soy milk, but aside from that, I don't really enjoy going there. And so this is a place, it's all vegetarian. They have a number of non-dairy milks, soy, almond, and coconut. And they have made an arrangement with a local bakery to create vegan, gluten-free bakery options. Their soups are vegan. And this is a great little spot. So we did our first piece on that. And we just did another piece on a restaurant called Simple Veggie, and they do, it's a vegetarian Chinese style kind of cooking, but I'm really impressed with this particular place because it's the cleanest that I found. It's not really oily or salty, and the food is very fresh, so I'm hoping that they last because it's really hard to get a restaurant business going.
Yeah, that's a good idea for me. Maybe I can. We have a Charlotte County plant-based foodie, a group that's been started by a couple of us, and we try to meet and, you know, talk about, you know, whole foods, plant-based eating, and probably every quarter we try to go to a restaurant. We meet with a chef, and, you know, can you make us a plant-based meal for 30 or 40 people, and, you know, low oil, and, you know, if you can not add any oil, and they usually do a pretty good job, and we're, you know, trying to, you know, and there's one restaurant that we've been to now. If you call him up in advance, he will have a vegan option for you when you go there for dinner. Maybe a little bit more oily than it is when we go there, you know, as a group. But maybe that's another idea, would be to, okay, let's feature you a little bit more and give you a little bit more publicity on it. Because, I mean, I understand they're only going to make what sells. And, you know, this is the fried seafood hush puppy capital of the world down here, you know, and or steak and baked potato is the other, you know, if you don't want seafood.
Well, even though most smart chefs are learning that if they offer something vegan on the menu, excuse me, their business is going to do better because there are more families, there are more groups where there's at least one of us in the group. And if everyone can go to a restaurant together and everyone's happy, we're going to frequent that place more often. And the smart chefs are realizing it. It's really not hard to offer something that's vegan. It's, you know, they don't have to go out and get any kind of obscure foods like tempeh. Although, you know, it would be fun if they did. They could do a fine job. You know, I went to a party in an Italian restaurant sometime in the last year, and they had some really great foods. They didn't offer vegan or vegetarian, but they would make something for you if you asked for it. They made us a plate of grilled escarole, white beans, and lemon. The simplest thing. It was our main dish. It was gorgeous and phenomenal. And those are ingredients that any restaurant can have.
Yeah, it's not like they've got to go, you know, looking for it, because the one restaurant we did, and the guy was just really, really stressed out, you know, and he had done all this shopping and all this kind of stuff, and it's like, you know, and he was kind of making it, you know, kind of putting it, he put it to us in the price of things because he had, of all the work he had to go to find all this stuff, and it's like, well, no. It's really not that hard, and it's really not that expensive.
Yeah, so I think that's a good idea for you to educate some of the local restaurants and let them know you'll pay for it.
That's a good idea. So, so how else are you spreading the message around? Give me more hints.
Okay, so we have, this is my favorite. Gary is an actor, producer, director, and if you may have read in one of my bios or something, I sing opera and musical theater. And we've created an educational portion of our nonprofit. It's a vegan cabaret musical. We call it The Swingin' Gourmets. And it's a story that includes my journey with cancer and Gary's journey with being overweight and all the fad diets that he was on and finally making peace with his food. And it's fun. And we talk about a lot of great food and sing about it. And it's a flexible show, so we have different skits that we add in or take out depending on how much time we have or where we might be doing it, and we continue to develop it. And we plan on doing it this April 22nd, which is Earth Day, and it's also my birthday, and we're going to be doing it right here in Forest Hills in our neighborhood as a fundraiser for my nonprofit.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and we want to come to Florida and do it. So I'm connected with the Earthshade Miami group in Miami, obviously. Mm-hmm. And we'll keep talking about doing it there, but we haven't figured out the logistics just yet.
Well, you know, there's a plant-based foodies here in Port Charlotte. We're over 100 and some strong. There's a group in Naples that's over 100 and some strong. There's a group in Sarasota that's, you know, has a pretty good, Will Tuttle was just there. And so between, you know, and so that the span, I don't know if you know much, not too many people know that much about the West Coast as far as the geography, but that all spans about 60 miles, but it's all worth, you know, it's all within travel of any of the, and a lot of those people may frequent some of the other groups. So if you try to make a Florida tour, you might be able to go to Miami and swing across.
Absolutely. We're going to make that work and swing.
That sounds good. Now, I think I was reading that, you know, today and going on, but I believe, weren't you interviewed by Victoria Moran? I think I heard you sing Baby It's Cold Outside.
Oh, that was me.
Yes.
Yep.
Very good.
Oh, it was nice of her to play that. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that interview. Yeah, she has a good podcast as well and has some very
interesting. And you know what? It still is cold outside. It's been snowing all day out here.
Oh, really? Yeah, we're having Florida spring right now today. It's about 80 degrees and sunny. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Woo.
We've had a cold winter too. We've had some rain down here, and you know, my daughter lives in West Virginia, and she doesn't. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like 40 some degrees when I went to the pool this morning. You know, it's just as, oh, I really feel for you. You know.
But, yeah.
No.
Well, we all have our specialties in the different areas where we live.
Yes, you have vegan restaurants, and we have sunshine, but and seafood.
But you have a few restaurants. You have Sublime, which is Sublime. Yeah. That's probably a bit of a drive for you to get to, but it's down there in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, that's a pretty good hike to get food. No, there actually are. They're popping up. We have a couple in Sarasota. And again, you know, there are places where you can go and get a, at least they know the word vegan, and you can, you know, manage to, you know, they'll make you a pretty nice dinner. So yeah, it's coming along. It really is. A lot more options than there used to be. You know, you don't have to, you know, eat French fries and lettuce.
Yeah, you mentioned John Robbins before, and I'm actually still working with him. He created the Food Revolution Network with his son Ocean, and we did a 6-week course back in May, and we did it in October, and we're doing it again this May and June. Mm-hmm. It's an online 6-week program for people interested in learning how to eat healthier, and that might be something that's interesting to some of your patients who want to know how to do it.
Yeah, that would be great. I mean, I think, you know, the more information I can give people to read, and I do think you have to, you know, like anything, you really have to make up your own mind that it's something that you want to do and that you're convinced that it works. And so the more, you know, TED Talks or YouTube videos or podcasts or books that, you know, you can get people to read, you know, I think the more on board they get, and then the more different cookbooks. And you know, once you find out, you know, the go-to meal. So, I mean, it's a process, but if you can just get people to open up a couple, you know, like a DVD series or an online series, suddenly it's not quite so difficult.
Unfortunately, if we had the government behind us, there could be financial incentives, which would really help.
Yeah.
To encourage people to try it. The 2015 dietary guidelines that have just been proposed are actually pretty positive. I don't know if you've gotten to see the summary.
Yes, yeah, I mean, they are, of course, you know, it's certainly a step in the right direction. The president of the American College of Cardiology is plant-based now because of his patients, which is very cool, you know. So it's certainly out there, more and more people, you know, more and more physicians are starting to think about it. It'd be nice if we had health grades like teachers get graded on how well their students do. You know, I mean, we should really get, you know, graded on, you know, how many stents somebody needs. You know.
Yeah, the way doctors are measured today, doctors should be measured on how healthy their patients are, right?
Right. The whole system is a little bit geared towards being sick as opposed to being healthy, and it's based towards volume instead of, you know, quality. And you know, again, I don't think and physicians aren't really, it's not like they're enjoying the 5-minute run in and write a prescription and run out visits. Nobody's getting any satisfaction from that. And make sure you do your electronic medical records and check all the boxes. No, you know, nobody is happy with that, you know, and people have much, you know, most of us became physicians to be able to sit and speak and talk with our patients and know their families. And, you know, my best days are when I can push my chair back against the wall and we just sit and have a talk about nutrition and how I grew up and how they grew up and how things could be. You know, that's a rewarding day for me. Now, you know, on the other hand, you know, you get behind and, you know, my nurse is out pounding on the door, and, you know, we're going. But, you know, in the end, it is still much more rewarding than just running in and out and scheduling procedures all day. And
right, absolutely.
You know, the bottom line is that's when it comes down to it. That's, you know, I feel good about, you know, the guy that, you know, like I told you about earlier today, you know, with the bladder cancer and the coronary artery disease, you know, they just, you know, and he said to me, and he was somebody that really wasn't sure that I was going to get through it all. And he says, well, you're my doctor. And if you said eat this way, I guess I will. You've ruined me going out to dinner and you've ruined my lobster dinner, but I guess I'll have to do it. You know, and it's like, well, you know. Thank you.
It's a very big problem, and the problem extends outside of the medical community, unfortunately. We need everybody doing their part, and you're doing a great thing. But it's such a big problem. I was just talking today on my show with Christopher Leonard, who wrote a book called The Meat Racket, The Secret Takeover of America's Food Business. And it's just a horrifying story of how we got to where we are today with a few corporations managing the creation and sale of chicken meat and chicken, cattle, and pigs. And it's a horrifying story of exploitation to the nth degree of all of these poor farmers that put themselves in debt to grow these foods that these corporations end up making big profits on. And they're everywhere. And unfortunately, a lot of people grab these kinds of food because they appear cheap. They don't realize we're paying for them tremendously with our tax dollars on so many levels. But these foods are everywhere, and they're being controlled by just a few big corporations, and it's really hard to make a dent in that kind of culture.
Yeah. Yeah, it just comes down to, you know, people have to vote with their wallet, and that's the only thing that's gonna change things. And go in.
Yeah, we have to stop buying this stuff. Everybody has to stop eating this food. That's because our government officials, unfortunately, don't have the balls to do enough about it, even if they want to, because they're so bullied by these corporate lobbyists and the big money that's behind them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, even, you know, with the great things that have come out with the, you know, the dietary guidelines, you know, eat more vegetables, eat a predominantly based diet. But then you have that, you know, little egg, the thing that's got a lot of publicity is like, oh, cholesterol's okay for you and eggs are okay for you. And you can take eggs off the bad list. And, you know, it's like, well, and that study was produced by the egg board, you know, I mean, and it's like, and it's like, there's more than just cholesterol to the egg. And, you know, it goes way deeper than that. But you know, that's again, the media, you know, and it drives me nuts to hear the media disassemble the little science that's out there as far as, you know, and it's your right to eat donuts, and we're going to put them on the morning shows and, you know, all this.
Right.
And it's like you could go, you know, get your screening, get your mammogram, get your colonoscopy. Everything will be okay. Somebody will cut the tumor out and you can go back to eating donuts. And it's like, no. Everybody's afraid, you know, there's like I said, you know, John McDougall, Dr. Goldhammer, you know, there are people that are, you know, not afraid to kind of be blunt about it. But there's a lot of the world that's, you know, very squeamish about coming out and saying it.
Well, there's, for the people that want it, they find the information and that's good. And then you hope it spreads from there because people around them see the tremendous positive changes that they experience, how good they look, how good they feel. And I want to think it's a rolling snowball that's just going to get bigger.
I'm
looking at a pile of snow right now. That's all I can think of.
All you can see is a snowball. Yikes.
I'm thinking about snowballs.
I'm sure it's beautiful. I grew up in West Virginia. I've seen my fair share of snowballs. that's fantastic. You know, it is amazing though. You know, John Robbins and his son, certainly I've done the food revolution, some of their videos and things, and they do have a wonderful way of presenting things.
John channels a higher dimension. I don't know how he does it, but he does it very well.
Yeah, I watch and I listen, and I'm trying my best. And then sometimes John McDougall comes out, you know, and he laughs. I interviewed him too, you know, but he's, you know, he's pretty much no bones about it. Dr. Esselstyn's another one, and he presents it in a way that, you know, he's that fatherly figure that, you know, sure, I'll eat plants, you know, after he talks,
mm-hmm.
So, you know, certain people maybe have a better way than others. I, you know, kind of grew up in the hit it over the head till somebody catches on type environment. So,
please.
Well, good. Well, you know, I certainly, hope that you'll bring your show down in Florida. That would be fantastic. And, you know,
well, now I have more reason to do that.
Yeah. I think you should go on. I think you should make the loop, you know, and
make the tour.
Mm-hmm. Make the tour. I think it'd be great, and we can certainly get you a house full. We can find some place to you know, have you present, and
right.
It'd be fantastic. So yeah, when you start to find dates, give me some dates, and I'll start doing legwork on this end.
Okay, that sounds good.
Very good.
Well, I look forward to talking to you a little bit more on my show next week.
All right. Thank you. I look forward to it as well. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Happy shoveling.
Thank you.
Right.
Take
bye-bye.
Care. Bye.
Well, I hope you enjoyed the interview with Karen. She and Gary are both very compassionate people. They're doing a great job spreading the vegan message, not only to help save the animals, save the environment, but spreading the message on how a plant-based diet can help make you, healthier. And even, when she had cancer, and because of her plant-based diet, she's done excellent. And she tolerated, the medications well and is, thriving and surviving and, again, goes on to educate other people. So it was a pleasure to interview her. I will be on her show as well. And that is the Responsible Eating and Living Real Network. Check out her website. I'll leave the email and such on the and the address on the show notes. Also, think about looking into John Robbins' website under the Food Revolution and his upcoming programs. If you haven't read his book, Diet for a New America, I strongly recommend it. As new plant-based people, oftentimes, the first question that comes up is, where do you get your protein? So I thought I'd give you a few sources of vegan protein one-liners that you could come back with. Basically, a cup of spinach has 7 grams of protein. 2 cups of cooked kale has 5 grams of protein. A cup of peas has 9 grams of protein. A cup of soy or almond milk has 7 to 9 grams of protein. Quinoa, 9 grams of protein per cup. Tofu, just a 4-ounce serving, 9 grams of protein. And you can get that for $2, so certainly it's not too expensive. Lentils, a whole whopping 18 grams of protein for 1 cup. Other beans, pinto, black, white beans, 13 to 15 grams of cup. And sprouted bread, 10 grams a serving size. So, if you're looking for 50 to 60 grams of protein a day, which is pretty much what an average-sized person would need, it's so easy to get, and you don't have to worry about counting your protein or worrying about getting enough protein out. I'll often ask people, have you ever seen a protein-deficient person? And if you ever seen an advertisement for a doctor that deals in protein deficiency, it just doesn't happen. And there's been some recent studies also that come out that, excess of protein may be linked to increased rates of hypertension. And certainly in Dr. Campbell's work with the China study and then his book, he subsequently published some other things in the book Whole. The protein in animal protein is truly inflammatory. Not only is it carcinogenic, but also very inflammatory to the blood vessels. So, it's something that you certainly want to get your protein from plant sources, but you don't have to worry about being protein deficient at all. Again, I'd like to thank you for listening this evening. If you have any questions, please email me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. The other thing I thought, if there's anyone out there that has a vegan restaurant and you'd like to talk about your experience opening a vegan restaurant and how that got started, I'd love to hear from you. So email me and maybe we could even get you on the podcast. So for now, be plant strong and exercise as much as you can. Enjoy the sunshine. Have a great week.